Tonight on the program, we are proud to present UNO, featuring the talents of Anna Clark, Eric S. Humphrey, Jacob Christopher, Zach Hall, Carolyn DiMaria, Philip Von Zweck, and John Wenzel. Each week, Blindspot creates a unique live radio program that explores the possibilities of the medium. For more information about the show and those that work on it, please visit our website at stopgostop.com/blindspot. And now, Blindspot presents a narrative driven by chance operations, driven by a game of Uno, live on WLUW 88.7 Chicago, broadcasting from the campus of Loyola University.
This is the story of Rye Sling, the blind singer of the Spaceways, but not the official version. You sang his words in school. I pray for one last landing on the globe that gave me birth. Let me rest my eyes on the fleecing skies and the cool green mills, hills of earth.
Elfrida Swancourt was a girl whose emotions lay very near the surface. Their nature more precisely, and as modified by the creeping hours of time, was known only to those who watched the circumstances of her history. Personally, she was the combination of very interesting particulars, whose rarity, however, lay in the combination...
Or perhaps you sang in French or German, or it might have even been Esperanto, while Terra's rainbow banner rippled over your head.
Itself rather than in the individual elements combined. As a matter of fact, you did not see the form and substance.
The cold passed reluctantly from the earth, and the retiring fog relieved an army stretched out on the hills, resting. As the landscape...
The language does not matter. It was certainly on earth, certainly an earth tongue. No one has ever translated green hills into the lisping Virilian speech. No Martian ever croaked and whispered it to the dirty corridors.
Sir Joseph Blaine, a heavy... yellow-faced man in a suit of gray clothes and a flannel waistcoat walked down St. James Street.
This is ours. We of Earth have exported everything from Hollywood crawlies to synthetic radioactives, but this belongs solely to Terra.
Of her features when conversing with her, and this charming power of preventing a material study of her lineaments by an interlocutor, originated not in the cloaking effect of a well-formed manner, for her manner was childish and scarcely formed, but in the attractive crudeness of the remarks themselves. She had lived all her life in retirement.
Changed from brown to green, the army awaked and began to tremble with the eagerness at the noise of...
Across the park and to the Admiralty, which he entered from behind, opening the private door with a key and making his way to the large, shabby room in which he...
And to her sons and daughters, wherever they may be. We've all heard many stories of Reisling. You may have even been one of the many who have sought degrees or acclaimed by the scholarly evocations of his published works.
The monstrari digito of idle men had not flattered her, and at the age of 19 or 20, she was no further on in social consciousness.
It cast its red eyes on the road, which were growing from long throws from liquid mud of proper thoroughfares. A river amber-tinted in the shadows of its banks, peered at the enemy's feet. And at night, when the stream had become a sorrowless blackness, one could see across the red, eye-like glam of hostile campfires set in the low browns of distant hills. Once a certain tall soldier developed virtues, he went recklessly to wash a shirt. He came flying back from the brook, waving his garment like a banner-like. He was swelled with a tale he had heard from a reliable friend who had heard from a...
He looked over the papers on his desk, nodded, and touched the bell. If Mr. Needham is on the way, pray show him up, he said to the answering clerk. He half rose as Needham appeared and waved him to a comfortable chair on the other side of the desk. Having finished with poor Delaney, he said, we now come to another gentleman of whom we have no news, Stephen Martyrin.
Then an urban young lady of 15. One point in her, however, you did notice. That was her eyes. In them was seen a sublimation of all of her. It was not necessary to look further. There she lived.
Songs of the Spaceways, the Grand Canal, and other poems, high and far, and upship. Nevertheless, although you have sung his songs and read his verses in school and out your whole life, it is at least an even money bet, unless you're a spaceman yourself, that you've never heard of most of Reisling's unpublished songs. Such items as Since the Pusher Met My Cousin, That Red-Headed Venus Berg Gal.
A truthful cavalryman who had heard it from a trustworthy brother, one of the orderlies at division headquarters, he adopted the important air of a herald in red and gold. We're going to be moving tomorrow, sure, he said apostrophically to a group in Company Street. We're going way up the river, cut out and come across to Bandon.
I do not think I have heard his name. I do not suppose you have, yet you and your people have quite certainly found his cipher at the foot of many a cogent report. When he is going up and down in the world on our behalf, and so he often does, Sir Joseph stifled and, or did, and carried on. He almost invariably sails with Captain Aubrey, whose name is no doubt familiar. Oh, certainly, said Needham, who wished to make a good impression on his formidable figure, but whose talents did not really lie in that direction. The gentleman who was so unfortunate...
To his attentive audience, he drew a loud and elaborate plan of a very brilliant campaign. When he had finished, the blue-collared men scratched into a small arguing group between the rows of...
Keep your pants on, Skipper. Or a spacesuit built for two. Nor could we quote them in a family magazine. Reisling's reputation was protected by a careful literary executor and by the happy chance that he was never interviewed. Songs of the Spaceways appeared...
This reference to Captain Aubrey's stand in the pillory did not seem to be well received, and to remedy the situation, Needham added a knowing son to the notorious General Aubrey. If you wish, said Sir Joseph coldly. Yet he might also...
He sat mournfully down. Smoke drifted lazily from a muddled and quaint chimneys. That's a lie. It's all a lie. It's a thundering lie, said another private loudly. His smooth face was flushed, and his hands were thrust silkenly into his trousers pockets. He took the matter as an affront to him. I don't believe that Durham Old Army ever gonna move. We're set. We got ready to move 8 times in the last 2 weeks, and we ain't gonna move.
These eyes were blue. Blue as autumn distance, blue as the blue we see between the retreating moldings of hills and woody slopes on a sunny September morning. A misty and shady blue that had no beginning or surface and was looked into rather than at. As to her presence, it was not powerful.
The tall soldier felt calm upon to defend the truth of a rumor he himself had introduced. He and the loud one came near to fighting over it. The corporal began to swear before they assembled. He had just...
Described as the officer who, commanding a 14-gun brig, took a 32-gun Spanish expect frigate and carried her into Mahon in the year one, who cut out the French frigate Diane in a boat attack on the heavily guarded port of St. Martin, and who, most recently, returning with his squadron from the most active cruise against slavery in the Gulf of Guinea, utterly frustrated the French descent of the south of Ireland, driving a line of battleship on the rocks, to say nothing of, yes, Mr. Cartling, to his secretary. The pardon, sir, engrossed at last, said Cartling.
Some women can make their personality pervade the atmosphere of a whole banqueting hall. Elfrida was no more persuasive than that of a kitten. Elfrida had, as her own thoughtfulness, which appears in the face of the Madonna della Sedia, without its rapture, the warmth and spirit of the type of women's features most common beauties, mortal and immortal, of Reuben, without their insistent fleshiness, the characteristic expression of the female faces of Correggio, that of the yearning human thoughts that lie too deep for tears, was hers sometimes, but seldom under ordinary conditions. The point in Elfrida Swancourt's life at which a deeper current may be said to have permanently set in was one winter afternoon when she found herself standing in the character of a hostess, face to face.
The week he died, when it became a bestseller, the publicity stories about him were pieced together from what people remembered about him, plus the highly colored handouts from his publishers. The resulting traditional picture of Riesling is about as authentic as George Washington's hatchet or King Alfred's cakes. In truth, you would not have wanted him in your parlor. He was not socially acceptable. He had a permanent case of sun itch, which he scratched continually, adding nothing to his negligible beauty.
Dr. Marturin took part in the expedition? Certainly. Not only was it his duty at the Bologna's surgeon, but he is passionately opposed to slavery. Needham pursed his lips and shrugged. He's also an eminent naturalist, one of our...
Van der Voet's portrait of him for the Harriman Centennial Edition of his work shows a figure of high tragedy, a solemn mouth, sightless eyes concealed by a black silk bandage. He was never solemn. His mouth was always open, singing, grinning, drinking, or eating. The bandage was any rag, usually dirty. After he lost his sight, he became less and less neat about his person. Noisy Riesling was a jetman, second class.
He had a costly board floor in his house, he said. During the early spring, he had refrained from adding extensive to the comfort of his environment because he had felt that the army might start on the march at any moment. Of late, however, he had been impressed that there were in short of an eternal camp. Many of the men engaged in a spirited debate on outlined in a lucid manner all the plans
with a man she had never seen before. Moreover, looking at him with a Miranda-like curiosity and interest that she had never yet bestowed on a mortal. On this particular day, her father, the rector of a parish on the sea-swept outskirts of Lower Wessex, and a widower, was suffering from an attack of gout. After finishing her household supervisions, Elfrida became restless.
With eyes as good as yours, when he signed on for a loop trip to the Jovian asteroids and the RS Rosshawk. The crew signed
of
releases...
Of a commanding general. He was opposed by the men who advocated that there were other plans of the campaign. They clamored of each other, numbering...
In more liberal companies, Sir Joseph might have spoken of the paper on Puddos, with particular reference to the anomalous...
He several times left the room, ascended the staircase, and knocked at her father's chamber door. "Come in," was always answered in a hearty, out-of-door voice from the inside. "Papa."
Of a commanding general. He was opposed by men who advocated that there are other plans for the campaign. "What's up, Jim? The army's got move and... what you talking about? How you ever know this? Well, could believe in Murnaud just there was much food for thought of this matter, in which..."
She said on one occasion to the genial-faced, handsome man of 50, who, puffing and fizzing like a bursting bottle, lay on the bed wrapped in a dressing gown, and every now and then enunciating, in spite of himself, a letter or two of some word or words that were almost like oaths. "Papa, will you not come downstairs this evening?"
For everything in those days, a Lloyd's associate would have laughed in your face at the notion of insuring a spaceman. The Space Precautionary Act that had never been heard of, and the company was responsible only for wages, if and when. Half of the
this
ships...
This evening, she spoke distinctly. He was rather deaf. "Afraid not, very much afraid."
Anomalous phalanges that Dr. Marturin had read at the Royal Society, and the sensation it had caused among those capable both of hearing what he said and of appreciating the full import of what they heard. In the present circumstances, he carried straight on.
"That went further than Luna City, never came back. Spacemen did not care."
"Elfrida, I can't even bear a handkerchief upon this deuced toe of mine, much less a stocking or slipper. There it is again. No, I shan't get up till tomorrow." "Then I hope this London man won't come, for I don't know what I shall do, Papa." "Well, it would be awkward, certainly. I should hardly think he would come today." "Why?" "Because the wind blows so." "Wind? What ideas you have, Elfrida."
"By preference, they signed for shares, and any one of them would have bet you that he could jump from the 200...
This meeting was wholly unnecessary from a departmental and political point of view, and the files available to Needham might have be of great...
He replied. He came near to convincing them by disdaining the produce proof. He grew most excited over it. They were there was a joyful private who listened with eager ears to the words of a tall soldier and to the varied comments of his comrades. After receiving...
Whoever heard of wind stopping a man from doing his business? The idea of this tome of mine coming on so suddenly. If he should arrive, you must send him up to me, I suppose, then give him some food and put him to bed in some way. Dear me, what a nuisance this all is. Must he have dinner? Too heavy for a tired man at the end of a tedious journey. Tea, then. Not substantial enough. High tea, then. There's cold fowl, rabbit pie, some pasties, and things of that kind. Yes, high tea. Must I pour out his tea, Papa? Of course, you are the mistress of the house. What? Sit there all the time with a stranger, just as if I knew him and not anybody to introduce
us? A few days
us.
Before the returning squadron reached Bantry's Bay, Habanachithal killed himself. Opposition no longer existed, and I at once took the necessary steps.
He came near to convincing. A full of dis...
Floor of the Harriman Tower and ground safely. If you'd offered him 3-2 and allowed
I sent over an express telling him that all was well and that he might gather his family and wealth as soon as he chose. He came back to England, accompanied by his wife, and they both set off by the shortest route. Mrs. Martyrin, being subject to the seasickness, with the intention of posting down on the groin to make arrangements for the transfer of his fortune, all in gold, by the way, to his country, and then of picking up the protégés and the child at Avila. Where is Avila? In Old Castile. 8 days after he left, we had information from one of our best agents.
Rubber heels for the landing. Jetmen were the most carefree of the lot and the meanest. Compared with them, the masters, the radar men, and the astrogators, there were no supers or stewards in those days, were gentle vegetarians. Jetmen knew too much.
He laid down on a wide bunk that stretched across the end of the room. In the other end, cracked boxes were made to serve as furniture. They were grouped about the fireplace. The picture from an illustration weekly was upon the log walls, and three rifles were parallel on pegs. Equipment hung on handy projections, and some tin dishes laid on a small pile of firewood. A folded tent was serving as a room. The sunlight, without beating upon it, made it glow a light shade of yellow. A small window shot an oblique square of withered light on the cluttered floor. The smoke from a fire at times neglected the clay chimney and wreathed around the room, and this flimsy chimney of clay and sticks made endless threats to set ablaze the whole establishment. The youth was in a little trace of astonishment. So they were at last going to fight. On the morning, perhaps, there would have been a battle.
The others trusted the skill of the captain to get them down safely. Jetman knew that skill was useless against the blind, fitful devils chained inside their rocket motors. The Goshawk was the first of Harriman's ships to be converted from chemical fuel to atomic power piles, or rather the first that did not blow up. Risling knew her well. She was an old tub that had piled the...
Nonsense, child, about introducing. You know better than that. A practical, professional man, tired and hungry, who has been traveling ever since daylight this morning, will hardly be inclined to talk and air courtesies tonight. He wants food and shelter, and
he had been denounced to the Spanish government as the prime mover in the Peruvian conspiracy, in the Peruvian attempt at declaring themselves independent of Spain. Was there any truth to
that? Simply because I am suddenly laid up and cannot. There's nothing so dreadful in that, I hope.
Was there any truth to the denunciation? Yes, there was. Oh, cried Needham, deeply impressed. And then, it very nearly succeeded, according to our information. Very nearly indeed. A matter of a few hours...
Lotus City run. Supra New York space station to Leeport and back, before she was converted for deep space. He had worked the Luna run...
You get all kinds of stuff into your head from reading so many of those novels. Oh, no, there's nothing dreadful in it when it becomes plainly a case of necessity like this. But you see, you are always there when people come to dinner, even if we know them. And this is some strange London man of the world who will think it odd, perhaps. Very well, let him. Is he Mr. Hubie's partner? I should scarcely think so. He may be. How old is he, I wonder? That I cannot tell. You will find the copy of my letter to Mr. Hubie and his answer upon the table in my study. You may read them, and then you'll know as much as I do about our visitor. I have read them.
He could not accept with assurance an omen that he was about to mingle in one of those great affairs on earth. He had, of course, dreamed of the battle all of his life, of vague and bloody conflicts that had thrilled him with their sweep and fire.
We should have been home. Home, hands down. But for a silly, busy, prating, enthusiastic fool, a prisoner of war who escaped from Aubrey's ship and ran up and down to Lima, calling out that Maturin was a British agent, that the revolution was paid for by English gold. At the last moment, the cry was taken up by the French mission, sent there on the same errand, but with inadequate funds, and they made such
a noise.
In visions,
he had seen himself in many struggles. He had imagined people secure in the shadow.
In her, and had been along on the first deep space trip. Dry water on Mars, back to everyone's surprise. He should have been made chief engineer by the time he signed for the Jovian loop trip. But after the dry water pioneer trip, he'd been fired, blacklisted, grounded at Lunar City.
Well, what's the use of asking questions, then? They all contain all I know. Ugh, plague you, you old scamp. Don't put anything there. I can't bear the weight of a fly. Oh, I'm sorry, Papa, I forgot. I thought you might be cold, she said, hastily removing the rug she had thrown upon the feet of the sufferer, and waiting
of his eagle-eyed prowess. But awake, he had regarded battles as crimson blotches on the pages of the past. He had put them as things of bygone, with his thought image of heavy crowns and high castles. There was a portion of his world history which he had regarded...
Maturin had to leave the country. This wretched Dutord reached Spain a little while ago, and they asked us for an explanation. You denied everything, of course, Sir Joseph bowed. But it was clear they did not believe us. They clapped an embargo on his money in Coruna.
Until she saw that consciousness of her offense had passed from his face.
For having spent his time writing a chorus and several verses at the time when he should have been watching his gauges.
She withdrew from the room and retired again downstairs. Chapter 2. When two or three additional hours had merged the same afternoon and evening, some moving outlines might have been observed against the sky on the summit of a wild lone hill in that district. They circumscribed two men, having at present the aspect of silhouettes sitting in a dog cart and pushing along in the teeth of the wind. Scarcely a solitary house or man had been visible along the whole dreary distance of open country they were traversing, and now that night had begun to fall, the faint twilight, which still gave an idea of the landscape to their observation, was enlivening by the quiet appearance of the planet Jupiter, momentarily gleaming in intenser brilliancy in front of them, and by Sirius shedding his rays in rivalry from his position over their shoulders. The only lights apparent on the earth were some dull spots of red glowing here and there upon the distant hills, which, as the driver of the vehicle gratuitously remarked to the hirer, were smoldering fires for the consumption of peat and gorse roots, where the common was
as times of war, but he thought it had been long gone over the horizon as disappeared forever. From his home of youthful eyes, he had looked upon the war in his own country with distrust. It must be some sort of play affair. He had long despaired of witnessing a Greek-like struggle. Such would be no more, he had said.
We had a few reports of his passage, chiefly from military intelligence, the last being a dubious account of a wealthy pair with an escort traveling through Aragon in a coach and four, then nothing. Nothing whatsoever. All traces lost. And the Aragon report was geographically...
The song was the infamous, "The Skipper is a Father to His Crew," with the uproariously unprintable final couplet. The blacklist did not bother him. He had won an accordion from a Chinese barkeep in Luna City by cheating at one
was
thumb.
Was being broken up for agricultural purposes. The wind prevailed, but with little abatement from its daytime boisterousness.
Men were better, or more timid. Secular and religious education had affected
three or four small clouds, delicate and pale, creeping along under the sky southward to the channel. 13 of the 15 miles intervening
then again,
the railway.
Although Marchrin is a wealthy man, and an uncommonly wealthy man, he never gives his appearance, being habitually threadbare and always inconspicuous. Your people have some contacts in Spain that we do not as yet possess, and if they can throw any light whatsoever on the subject, we should be most grateful. I shall, of course, do everything in my power.
And thereafter kept going by singing to miners for drinks and tips until the rapid attrition in spacemen.
Terminus, at the end of their journey, had been gone over when they began to pass along the brink of a valley some miles in extent, wherein the wintry skeletons of a more luxuriant vegetation than had hitherto surrounded them proclaimed an increased richness of soil.
Caused the company agent there to give him another chance. He kept his nose clean on the Luna run,
which showed signs of far more careful enclosure and management than had any slopes they had yet passed. A little further, and...
I shall, of course, do everything in my power. Many thanks. He has been much on my mind, a pearl of an agent, totally unmercenary, polyglot, a natural philosopher with innumerable contacts among the learned abroad. A man with a profession that introduced him everywhere. A physician is welcome everywhere. And a Catholic, which is such a recommendation in the greater part of the world. A Roman and trustworthy.
Throw grappling instinct or else firm finance held in check the passion. He had burned several times to enlist. Tales of great movements shook the land. He might not be distinctively heroic, but there seemed to be...
Yes, sir, said Blaine, touching a private bell under the desk with his foot. And in the very first place, I should have said that he utterly abhors all tyranny.
Much glory in them. He had read of marches, sieges, conflicts, and he had longed to see it all. His busy mind had drawn from him large pictures of extravagant in color, lured in with breathlessness deeds.
For a year or two, and got back into deep space. Helped give Venusberg its original ripe reputation, strolled the banks of the Grand Canal when a second colony was established at the ancient Martian capital, and froze his toes and ears on a second trip to Titan. Things moved fast.
An opening in the elm, stretching up from this fertile valley, revealed a mansion. That's Endelstow House, Lord Luxilian, said the driver. Endelstow House, Lord Luxilian's, repeated the other mechanically. He then turned himself sideways and keenly scrutinized the almost invisible house with an interest which the indistinct picture itself seemed far from adequate to create.
The door opened, Carling glided in, and bending respectfully over Sir Joseph, he said, I do beg your pardon, sir, but the First Lord particularly desires a word. Is it urgent? I'm afraid so, Sir Joseph. Mr. Needham, sir, I must crave your indulgence.
But his mother had discouraged him. She had affected to look with some contempt upon the qualify of his war ardor and patriotism. She could calmly seat herself and with no apparent difficulty give him many hundreds of reasons why he was vastly more important on the farm than in the fields of battle. She had certain ways of expression that told him that her statesmen on the subject came from a deep conviction. Moreover, on her side was his belief that her ethical motive in the argument was impregnable. At last, however, he had made firm rebellion against his yellow light thrown upon this color of his ambition. The newspapers, the gossip in the village, his own picturings. He had aroused him to an uncheckable degree. There were in true fighting finally down there.
But fortunately, we have reached a natural term in our most interesting and valuable conversation. May I hope to hear from you in due course? Certainly, sir, without fail. Tomorrow at the latest. Stephen was still in Sir Joseph's mind as he walked back to his house in Shepherd Market. A walk much insisted.
Almost every day, the newspaper printed accounts of decisive victory. One night, he had laid in bed. The winds had carried to him the clamoring of the church bells as some enthusiastic jerk the rope frantically to tell the twisted news of a great battle. This voice of the people rejoicing in the night had made him shiver in the prolonged ecstasy of excitement.
By Dr. Maturin, who distrusted both the color of Blaine's face and the eminently palpable state of his liver. Stephen was one of the few men Sir Joseph cordially liked. Entomology, the Royal Society, excellent wine, and they both hated Napoleon. But there was also that particular sympathy and mutual respect which transforms such, he hesitated for the word, shared interests, inclinations, traits, characteristics, into
later he had gone down the hill to his mother's room and spoke to him. Mom, I'm going to enlist. Henry, do not be a fool.
In those days, once the power pile drive was accepted...
His mother had replied. She had then covered her face with a quilt. There was an end to the matter for the night.
The number of ships that put out from the Luna...
Nevertheless, the next morning, he had gone to the town that was near his mother's farm and enlisted into the company that was forming there.
Terra System was limited only by the availability of crews. Jetmen were scarce. The shielding was cut to a minimum to save weight, and a few married men cared to risk possible exposure to radioactivity. Risling did not want to be a father, so jobs would always be open to him during the golden days of the claiming boom. He crossed and recrossed the system, singing the...
Adequate to create. Yes, that's Lord Luxilian's, he said yet again, after a while, as he still looked in the same direction. What? Be we going there? No, Endelstow Rectory, as I have told you.
When he had returned home, his mother was milking the bridal cow. Four others stood waiting. Ma, I listed.
The doggerel that boiled up in his head and courting it out on his accordion.
Had said to her difficulty, no danger, there was a short silence. The Lord will be done. She had firmly replied, and that then continued to milk the bridal cow. When he had stood in the doorway with his mother, and his soldier clothes on his back, and with the light of excitement and the expectancy in his eyes almost defeated the glow and regret for the home bombs. He had seen two tears leaving their trails on his mother's scared cheeks. Still, she had disappointed him by saying nothing whatsoever about returning with his shield or on it. He had privately primed himself for a beautiful scene. He had prepared certain sentences which he thought he could use with touching effect, but her words destroyed his plans. She had dodgingly peeled potatoes.
At the corner of St. James Street, the usual crossing sweeper was waiting to see him across Piccadilly with a waving broom. Thank you, Charles, he said, handing him his weekly fourpence. On the other side, by the white horse, a man was carefully extracting a woman from a carriage, a very handsome woman indeed, and as Blaine walked along Half Moon Street, he found that he was reflecting on Stephen's marriage. Stephen had married a woman more handsome by far, the kind of woman Blaine
and
loved
addressed him the following way. You watch out, Henry.
I thought you might have altered your mind, sir, as you have stared that way for so long.
The master of the Grosshawk knew him. Captain Hicks had been an astrogator on Risling's first trip in her. Welcome home, Noisy, Hicks had greeted him. Are you sober, or shall I sign the book for you? You can't get drunk on the bug juice they sell here, Skipper. He signed and went below, lugging his accordion.
And could take care of yourself in here fighting business. You watch out and take good care of yourself. Don't you think you can lick a huge rebel army at the start, because you can't. You're just a little fella, almost a whole lot of others. And you keep quiet and do what they tell you. I know how you are, Henry.
How Maturin, who possessed even less presence, and at the time no fortune whatsoever, had presumed by far...
Oh, no, I'm interested in the house, that's all. Most people be, as the saying is. Not in the sense that I am. Ah. Well, his family then is no better than my own, I believe.
Handsome is as handsome does, crossed his mind, although he was very fond of Diana and greatly admired her spirit. Musing, he walked with his head bowed. The three well-worn steps came within his field of vision. He was conscious of a slight form standing at the door itself, and then of Stephen's face smiling down at him. Oh, oh, he cried in a voice more like that of a startling you.
Henry, I put in all your shirts because I want my boy to be just as warm and comfortable as anybody else in the army. Whenever they get holes in them, I want you to send them right back here to me so I can yarn them up. And Abbas, be careful and choose your company. There's lots of bad men in the army, Henry.
Hedgers and ditchers by rights. But once in ancient times, one of them, when he was at work, changed clothes with King Charles II and saved the king's life. King Charles came up to him like a common man and said offhand, "Man in the smock frock, my name is Charles II. Will you lend me your clothes?"
10 minutes later, he was back. "Captain," he stated darkly, "the number 2 jet ain't fit. The Cadmium dampers are warped." "Why tell me? Tell the chief." "I did. But he says they will do. He's wrong."
"The army makes them wild, and they like nothing better than their jobs of leading off young fellers like you. So it ain't been away from home so much in the lewd and mother and learning."
"Stephen, your name was in my mouth. You are as welcome as the first Red Admiral in spring. How do you do, my dear sir? How do you do? Walk in, if you please, and tell me how you do." Stephen walked in, shepherded with a surprising amount of fuss. Surprising in so reserved a plague.
The captain gestured at the book. "Scratch out your name and scram. We'll raise ship in 30 minutes. Riesling looked at him, shrugged, and went below again. It was a long climb to the Jovian planolets. The Hawk-class clunker had to blast for 3 watches before going into free flight. Riesling had the second watch. Damping was done by hand then, with the multiplying veneer and the danger gauge. When the gauge showed red, he tried to correct it. No luck. Jetmen don't wait. That's why they're jetmen. He slapped the emergency discover and fished at the hot stuff with the tongs. The lights went out. He went right ahead. A jetman has to know his power room in a way that your tongue knows the inside of your mouth. He sneaked a quick look over the top of the lead baffle when the lights went out. The blue radioactive glow did not help him any. He jerked his head back and went on fishing by touch. When he was done, he called over the tube. "Number 2 jet out, and for Christ's sake, get me some light down here." There was light. The emergency circuit, but not for him. The blue radioactive glow was the last thing his...
"I don't mind if I do," said Hedrilexilian, and they changed there and then. "Is King Charles II at home? Tell me your name, and they shall let you in, and you shall be made a lord. Now that was very nice of Master Charlie. Very nice indeed. Well, as the story is, the king came to the throne, and some years after that, away went Hedrilexilian, knocked at the king's door, and asked if King Charles II was in. 'No, he isn't,' they said. 'Then is Charles III, said Hedrilexilian. 'Yes,' said a young feller."
"To drink and swear. Keep clear of them, folks. Henry, I don't want you ever to do anything."
A cheerful fire was already burning, and Sir Joseph at once stirred it to a still livelier blaze. Turning, he shook Stephen's hand again. "What may I offer you?" he asked. "A dish of tea?" "No, you despise tea. Coffee? A glass of Sillery? No, it will not be importunate. You look wonderfully well, if I may be so personal. Wonderfully well. And I had been seeing you in a Spanish prison. Pale, unshaved, thin, ragged, verminous." He felt the force of Stephen's pale, questioning eye and went on. "That reptile Dutor...
standing by like a common man. Only he had a crown on. My name is Charles III.
Optic nerve ever responded to. As time and space come bending back to shape this star-speckled scene, the tranquil tears of tragic love still spread their silver sheen.
That you would be ashamed to keep me knowing about. Just to think as if it was if I was watching you. If you keep that in mind, lass, I guess you'll come out all right. Yeah, must alas remember your father too, child. And remember, he never drank and dropped of liquor in his life and seldom swore across oath. I don't know what else to tell you, Henry, except...
Gonzalez, who knew something of your activities in Catalonia, believed him, sequestered your treasure in Coruña, and gave orders that you were to be taken up the moment you came to gather it. This I learned from Wall and other holy, reliable sources a week after you had
that
left.
That ye must never do no shrinking, child, on my account. So, if so be that the time come when you have to be killed or do a mean thing, why, Henry, don't you think of anything except what's right, because there's many a woman who has buried up against such...
I really fancy that must be a mistake. I don't recollect anything in English history about Charles III.
Along the Grand Canal still soar the fragile towers of truth. Their fairy grace depends this place of beauty, calm and couth. Bone-tired, the race has raised the towers.
And the Lord will keep us all right. Don't forget about the socks and the shirts, child. And I've put a cup of blackberry jam with your bundle, because I know you like it above all things. Goodbye, Henry. Watch out and be a good boy. He had, of course, been impatient under the ordeal of this speech. He had not been quiet as he expected, and he had borne with it an air of irritation. He departed feeling vague relief. Still, when he looked back from the gate, he had seen his mother kneeling.
You cannot imagine the efforts I made to warn you or the quantities of cocoa leaves I devoured to keep my wits active. And now you see me sitting there, apparently perfectly well and quite unmoved. Almost makes me feel ill-used, indignant. Though, in parenthesis, I must thank you yet again for those blessed leaves. I have a reliable supply from that apothecary in Greek Street. May I offer you a quid? You are very good, but were I to indulge, the insensibility about my pharynx would...
Forgotten are their lores. Long gone, the gods who shed the tears that lap these crystal shores.
Said the other in a tone of mild remonstrance. Oh, that's right, history enough, only 'twasn't pretend. He was rather a queer-tempered man, if you remember. Very well, go on. And by hook or by crook, Ledger Luxillian was made a lord, and everything went on well till some time after, when he got into a most terrible row with King Charles IV. I can't stand King Charles IV, upon my word, that's too much. Why?
Slow beats the time-worn heart of Mars beneath this icy sky. The thin wind whispers voicelessly that all who live must die. Yet still the lacy spires of truth sing beauty's madrigal, and she herself will ever dwell along the Grand Canal. From the Grand Canal, by permission of Lux Transcriptions Limited, London and Luna City. On the swing back, they set Riesling down on Mars at Drywater.
There was a King George IV, wasn't there? Certainly. Well, Charles's be as common as George's. However, I'll say no more about it. Oh, well.
I paused, and Blaine said, I will not be so indiscreet as to ask whether you had any other and earlier sources of information.
Tis the funniest world I ever lived in. Pon my life, tis. That...
I had not, said Stephen, whose mind was yet to grasp the full extent of all the implications of Sir Joseph's news. Faith, I had not.
Such should be. The dusk had thickened into darkness while they
the
thus
boys
conversed.
Passed the hat, and the skipper kicked in a half-month's pay. That was all. Finish. Just another space bum who had not had...
Faith, I had not. My safety, our safety, depended under Providence, St. Patrick, Stephen, the proto-martyr, and St. Brennan, solely upon my own ineptitude, my own gross ineptitude.
The good fortune to finish it off when his luck ran out. He holed up with the prospectors and the archaeologist at How Far for a month or so.
Had looked back from the gate. He had seen his mother kneeling among the potato pens. Her brown face upraised was strained with tears, and her spared from quivering. He bowed his head and went on, feeling suddenly ashamed of his purpose. From his home, he had gone to the cemetery to bid adieu to many schoolmates. He had thronged about him with wonder and admiration. He had felt the gulf now between them, and it swelled with calm pride. He had some of his fellows who had done blue were quite overwhelmed with privilege from all of one afternoon, and it had been very delicious, and it had been a very delicious thing. They had strutted. A certain light-haired girl had made the venturous fun at his material spirit, but there was another, a dark-haired girl whom he had gazed at steadfastly, and he thought she grew demure and sad at sight of his blue and brass. As they walked down the path between the rows of the oaks, he had turned his head and detected her at the window watching his departure.
And could probably have stayed forever in exchange for his songs and his accordion playing. But spacemen die if they stay in one place too long. He hooked a crawler over to dry water again and thrice to Marzoopolis. The capital was so well into its boom, the preceding plants lined the Grand Canal on both sides and rolled the ancient waters with the filth of the runoff. This was before the Tri-Planet Treaty forbade disturbing cultural relics for commerce. Half the slender fairy-like towers had been torn down, and the others were disfigured to adapt them as pressurized buildings for Earthmen. Now, Reisling had never seen any of these changes.
And the outline and surface of the mansion gradually disappeared. The windows, which had before been as black blots on a lighter expanse of wall, became illuminated and were transfigured to squares of light on the general dark body of the night landscape as it absorbed the outlines of the edifice.
I might even say inefficiency. Will I tell you about it? If you would be so good, said Blaine, moving his chair closer. He does me no credit at all. At all. But since you have been to such pains, I owe you an account, however bald and inadequate. We landed on a sweet, calmy day, and Diana, having recovered from what slight remains of the seasickness still hung about her, we took coach and traveled westward along the coast. There was a good inn at Laredo, where we ate some hundreds of new-run infant eels.
As he perceived her, she immediately began to stare up, though, to the high branches at the sky. He had seen a good deal of fury and haste in her movement. As she changed her attitude, he often thought of it. On the way to Washington, his spirit had soared. The regiment was fed and...
Diana, a far more better traveler than I, if a more orderly mind where packing is concerned, suggested that I should make sure that everything was in place for our arrival at Coruna. Proper clothes for waiting on the governor, hair powder, my best wig, above all the elaborately...
And no one described them to him. When he saw Marzoopolis again, he visualized it as it had been before it was rationalized for trade. His memory was good. He stood on the Rarpician escalade where the ancient giant of Mars had taken their ease and saw its beauty spread out before him in
the
his
bank of the Holy
eyes.
Ghost, and in commerce had received the specific number of chests contained the state weighed.
Its gloomy monochrome. Not another word was spoken for some time, and they climbed a hill, then another hill piled on the summit of the first. An additional mile of plateau followed, from which could be discerned two lighthouses on the coast they were nearing, reposing on the horizon with a calm.
Crest at station after station until the youth had believed that he must be a hero. There was a lavish expedients of breed and cold meats, coffee and pickles and cheese, as he basked in the smile of the girls and was patted and complimented by every old man. He had felt growing with him and the strength to do mighty deeds of arms.
Lester of Benignity. The parish of their destination seemed to lie not far inshore, somewhere between Calm Beak and Tintagel. Another oasis was reached. A little dell lay like a nest at their feet, towards which the driver pulled the horse at a sharp angle and descended a steep slope which dived under the trees like a rabbit's burrow. They sank lower and lower. Endostow Rectory is inside here, continued the man with the reins. This is part about here is when...
Ice blue plain of water unmoved by tide, untouched by breeze and reflecting serenely the sharp bright stars of the Martian sky. Beyond the water, the lacy buttresses and flying towers of an architecture too delicate for our rambling heavy planet. The result was Grand Canal. The subtle change in his orientation enabled him to see beauty at Marzoopolis, where beauty was not now, began to affect his whole life. All women became beautiful to him. He knew them by their voices and fitted their appearances to the sounds. It is a mean spirit indeed who will speak to a blind man.
Everything was in place. Satin breeches, red-heeled shoes, powder, silver-hilted sword. Everything but this infernal piece of paper. I blush to own it, said Maturin. His sallow face, in fact, changed color as a pinkness rose from his lower cheeks to his forehead, disappearing
under... West Endelstow. Lord Luxilian's is East Endelstow, and has a church to itself. Parson Swancourt is the parson of both, and bobs backward and forward. Oh, well, 'tis a funny world. I believe there was once a quarry where this house stands.
After complicated journeys with many pauses, there had come months of monotonous life in the camp. He had had to believe that the real war was a series of death struggles with small time in between.
In gentle friendliness scolds the who had given their husbands
for sleep and meals. But since his regiment had come to the field, the army had done little but sit still and try to keep warm. He was bought then gradually to back to his old ideas. Greek-like struggles with would be no more. Men were better, were more timid. Secular and religious education had affected the throat-gobbling instincts, or less firm finance held the check of the passions. He had grown to regard himself merely as a part of a vast blue demonstration. His providence was to look out as far as he could for his personal comfort. For recreation, he could twiddle his thumbs and speculate on the thoughts which might change the minds of the generals. Also, he was drilled and drilled for review, and drilled and drilled and reviewed.
No peace sweetened the voices to wrestling. It populated his world with beautiful women and gorgeous men.
The only foe he had seen were some pickets among the riverbank. They were suntanning philosophical-like, who sometimes shot reflectively at blue pickets.
Green.
It populated his world with beautiful women and gorgeous men. Dark star passing Bernice's hair. Death song of a woods colt. And his other love songs of the wanderers.
When reproached for this afterwards, they usually expressed sorrow and swore that by their gods after...
The womanless men of space were the direct result of the fact that his conceptions were unsullied by tawdry truths. It mellowed his approach, changed his doggerel to verse, it sometimes even to poetry. He had plenty of time to think now. Time to get all the lovely words just so, and to worry of a verse until it sang true in his head, the monotonous beat.
The man who built it in past time scrapped all the gleb for earth to put round the rectory, and laid out a little paradise.
Against all his principles, Blaine cried out, "You will never tell me you lost the bank's receipt for all that gold, Stephen. Lost it? I beg your pardon."
Of Jetson. When the field is clear, the report's all seen. When the locks are shut, when the lights went green.
You've been listening to Blindspot Uno, a night of narrative driven by a chance operation, driven by a game of Uno. Featuring the talents of Anna Clark, Eric S. Humphrey, Jacob Christopher, Zach Hall, Carolyn DeMaria, Philip Von Zweck, and John Wanzel. Next week, tune in to have a night of mystery and deception. Tune in when Blindspot presents Twilight of the Idols. For more information about the program and those that produce it, please visit our website, stopgostop.com/blindspot. Thank you for listening. This has been Blindspot.
When the checkoff's done, when there's time to pray, when the captain nods, she'll blast away. Hear the jets, hear them snarl at your back. When you stretched on the rack, feel your ribs clamp your chest.
So how many games did you win?
I won four.
Feel your neck.
I think I won.
Grind the pain.
Endelstow Rectory is inside here, continued the man with the reins. This part about here is West Endelstow. Lord Luxillian's is East Endelstow and has a church to itself. I believe there was once a quarry where this house stands. The man who built it in past time scrapped all the gleb for earth to put round the rectory and laid out a little paradise of flowers and trees in the soil he had got together in this way. Whilst the fields he scraped has been good for nothing else ever since.
Strain her in your grip. Feel her rise. Feel her drive. Straining steel. Come alive. On her jets. Come to him now. Not while he himself was a jetman, but later, while he was hitchhiking from
Good
Mars
evening,
to Venus.
"Good evening, Captain Aubrey," said the admiral. "Sit down. Now, what have you to say about these French frigates you allowed us to slip past you? I have only to say that I very much regret any Frenchmen I should have got out to Brest. Then you admit they went by? I have expressed myself badly, my lord. I express nothing but regret at what is said to have taken place. I acknowledge no sort of responsibility."
He was slightly a ragged man who had spat skillfully between his shoes and possessed a great fund of bland and infangled assurance. The young liked him personally. Yank, the other, had informed him, "You done good, feller." The sentiment floated to him upon the still air had made him temporarily regret war. Various veterans had told him tales. Some talked of gray, bewhiskered hordes who were advancing with relentless curses and chewing tobacco and unspeakable valor.
"My dear Aubrey, Tom Coxswain tells me that I walked straight past you on Common Hard the other day. I am heartily sorry for it, because it might have looked intentional, might have led to a misunderstanding. However, a particular friend of yours and of Mr. Modrin's..."